Roy Vachon.
How does the French say Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Welcome to the Brown Briefly, podcast and weekly radio show on the Voice of Vachon. We are located on beautiful Vachon Island in the heart of the Salish Sea between Seattle and Tacoma in the state of Washington. That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian started the Briefly and brought his high standards of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's motto was, less is more. More or less, and he always offered so much more. Today, our diminished, maybe that's not the right word.
Our select
Briefly panel today includes big board pilot, real life pilot, treetop flyer, and almost fully reformed Texan, Truman O'Brien.
Almost fully reformed.
Also, Legal Beagle, consensus builder, former state attorney general, assistant attorney general, Ladies Schumann.
Schumann.
Easy for me.
That's not a phrase I'm familiar with.
I want to know what that was. Greg.
You wondered what a lady shoe salesman was. I really want to know what a lady shoe salesman is.
And Fulbright scholar, Craig Bellis.
It's great to be here.
We are missing two of our panel today, our avid defender of justice, mariner, cyclist, and top secret engineer Kevin Jones is swinging on the hook somewhere north of here, out of Wi-Fi range and so unable to join us. And also missing today is our part-time politico, most-time housing wonk, and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer, who is in Denver, I think, closing out her house and moving back full-time to Vachon Island. And I'm historian Bruce Hallman. Today, the show is going to focus on the 4th of July hydroplane race, and we're hoping our guest, Brian Breno, shows up here shortly, but if not, we'll fill in for sure. So before we jump in, let's take a moment and check about what special things we experienced this past week. Truman?
Yeah, well, I had a couple of things. The first thing is on Saturday night, I had the great good fortune to go see our lovely Kat Eggleston, who's our local celebrity here on the island. And she was performing at the Havara, and she had her guests with her. It's incredible, incredible singer-songwriter, Joe Jinks. Joe is from the Chicago area. But he had he's been 26 years, I think he said, as a professional musician. And we interviewed him this morning on the radio. And he was telling us that, you know, he lived in Seattle for 9 years. In fact, he had a 206 phone number. And I said, Kat, are you sure that's correct? 206? And she said, yeah, he used to live in Seattle. Oh, okay. But anyway, he was talking about how his time here in Seattle gave him the impetus or the knowledge that he could actually make a living as a musician without being a superstar. And I mentioned that to Craig and Craig said, oh man, that guy is a superstar. And he is. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal singer. Well, but anyway, it was a great show.
Well, Kat Eggleston lived in Chicago for a while, right?
That's how they met.
That's the connection.
Yeah. They both had been playing at there was some kind of a convention or a seminar or something that they both played at, and they got to know each other there.
Oh,
and,
fantastic.
He said he felt like she was the long-lost sister that he never had, you know. I thought that was pretty interesting. But anyway, the second thing I did is I flew up to Port Angeles yesterday and met with some folks up there that have got they've put together this disaster preparedness group for using a light aircraft in a disaster. And we went up and met with them to learn a little bit about their program and how it works and to see if maybe we could establish something like that here on the island.
Oh,
and anyway, it's very interesting and quite enlightening. So I think we've given us some impetus to move forward with it. So
yeah, I think Vashon International Airport will be a key link when the island goes down in a disaster if the ferries can't land and, you know.
Well, yeah, and the marinas go down. Well, and as someone has pointed out, you know, if you look at Japan and the tsunami, the waters around there were littered with debris for so long, there's no way you could get around in a boat, really.
Yeah, right.
Because of all the debris.
Yep.
So, man, it's going to be helicopters and airplanes are going to be it.
Yep.
So,
we're going to appreciate having an airport, right?
I think so. Very much so, yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like one of M.J. Witt's books.
It does. It does, doesn't it? Yeah,
right. For sure.
So, Greg, how about your week?
Well, you know, I was confronted with just a wonderful problem we have on Vashon, and it's which of several competing events am I going to go to? And I knew Truman would go to the Havre, and I've seen Kate play there several times, but I didn't. I didn't go to that one, but I knew I'd get a report from Truman. And it sounds as good as I thought it would be. The other one was the Coupe, which I'm normally at on the last Thursday or last Friday or Saturday. This last Saturday, the theme of Steve Ampson's presentation or whatever his program theme night was. The song from the year you graduated from high school.
Oh, boy.
So I can't wait to see the video of that. Peter Ray films those, and they do typically appear on Facebook and other social media.
Oh, I was not aware of that.
Yeah, there's a Coop a YouTube channel, so you can probably catch it there here in the next week or so.
Oh, all right.
And the next one that's at the end of July. Steve Ampson has picked songs that have the names of cities or towns in the either the title or the lyrics.
Oh, that should be fun.
There are a zillion songs.
I was just going to say, man,
to pick from. I didn't go to either one of those two things. I went to the Sugar Shack.
Oh,
I thought I'd go and visit Hetty over there. Yeah. Lynette and I went over to the Sugar Shack and listened to Goody Bag, a great band that played there. And just for a change, we went there and met with, coincidentally, M.J. Witt and his wife.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Dave, some other individuals that we know, Mario. And it was a very fun evening. Other than that, all I've been doing is trying to get my cars back on the road for summer, and I think I've got them. I got the brakes fixed on one of them. I got the oil and a couple of other things. I've got the hood struts on the one I've got parked out here in front replaced. It was always frustrating when the thing would bang down on the back of your head. You know, that's not ideal. So I think I've got things under control.
But there's only a few people that would say that they have their cars running.
I know it's decadent beyond belief. Yeah. I understand that, but you know, it's funny. I if I may digress for just a moment, I do get criticism for having so many automobiles. Environmentally, it doesn't seem like the right thing to do. Although most of those cars I have, we drive only a few hundred miles a year.
Yeah, and they're vintage. Come on.
Yeah, yeah, they're vintage cars. Yeah. I just got my collector plates for this one car. It's now 30 years old, parked out in front. And I love the kinetic art aspect of these cars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that they're beautiful bits of industrial art. And I like the mechanics. I like working on them. So I don't drive around on them, you know.
So
puffing myself up.
I'm puffed up enough
from what I eat. But
I just had to harass you a little, Craig. I really, actually, seriously think it's very cool.
Thanks.
And I know I'm exactly. Impressed, really am. And, you know, there's a gentleman here on the island that has a whole raft of vintage cars. And I think he has a different hat that he wears with each car. You know who I'm talking about?
I do. I do.
He's a delightful guy. But
yes.
And I asked him one time, he had a different hat for each car, and he kind of looked at me like,
I hadn't thought about that, but yes, I do.
Yeah. I think you're talking about Barry, if I remember right. Yeah. And then there's Chris O'Brien, who's got the most incredible motorcycle collection.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, and you've kept them out of the landfill.
So. Exactly. There you go.
So
what do you do up to this?
Well, interesting weekend. I woke up Saturday morning, and there was a pride flag flying on KVI Beach attached to the volleyball nets. And so I inquired around, and it's still flying today, and it's just very cool. But I inquired around, and our neighbors, Kurt and Missy Zumwalt, had guests, John and Thomas from the city. And John went down there early in the morning on Saturday and put this pride flag up. And it's just blowing in the wind, and it's just, and so it's the first thing you see when you walk onto KVI Beach, and it's very cool. So sort of that
is cool.
Indication that the beach is for everybody.
Right.
What about the volleyball net?
Well, you can still play volleyball, right?
Okay. Oh, you want to go down there and play some volleyball?
Yeah, right.
Why not?
No, he just strapped the flagpole to the volleyball net pole and so took it up another 10 feet or so, 12 feet or so.
Well, that was the other thing this weekend, wasn't it? It's a low tide.
Low tide festival at Point Robinson. Yeah. Puyallup Canoe came in. They had all kinds of activities going on there. I did actually a cruise around Quartermaster Harbor for the cooperative preschool as a fundraiser. They had auctioned off a cruise around Quartermaster Harbor, and it was just a perfect day. It was hardly any wind. It was bright, warm sun. It was just gorgeous.
Perfect.
And then on Sunday, it was my birthday.
I
had a birthday this weekend. So
we would have baked you a cake.
I don't think I need any more cake.
Yeah. A pie.
I had trouble buttoning my Hawaiian shirt this morning.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, that's a real problem.
If you can't get into your Hawaiian shirt,
you know you're in trouble. Right?
That's a sign. You don't have to get on a scale.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a litmus test right there.
Exactly. So, but had a great birthday, and all the kids and grandkids were out.
Well, happy birthday.
So it was good. And of course, looking forward to the 4th of July coming up, the fireworks. Just was talking to Todd Gateman yesterday down at the yacht club. He's getting his boat ready to be the sort of patrol boat and sort of fireworks sort of control boat. And he said this year they're going to have 21, I think it's, no, he's going to have 16 21-inch mortars.
Whoa.
Those are the ones that go up, 1,200 feet, something like that. Yeah. So don't be flying around.
No kidding.
The job.
I know a plane, though. We might be lame if it comes up.
I've told this before, but, fireworks from the air, it ain't the same.
No.
I've seen them. I went around the Bay Area one year on the 4th of July.
They're all over the place.
Oh, yeah. It was just alive. Yeah, right. And it was like, sparkly thing down there, but it ain't the same.
No. Yeah, sitting down on the waterfront around the harbor.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
Looking up at those things.
That's awesome.
And hear them reverberate around the harbor.
Exactly.
Sort of like, and, of course, all the complaints and all the issues about pets. And
yeah.
I mean, it's a constant sort of dilemma, which gets us to the subject of today's Brown Briefly that we'll come back to in just a minute, the 4th of July hydroplane race that takes place every year.
But Wait a minute. A race?
Yeah,
it's not a race.
Not
it's a
race.
Run. Yeah. We'll talk more about that in a minute.
Okay.
But before we get in, today, of course, it's July 1st, a very significant day, as it is every day. But it's, interestingly enough, it's National Postal Worker Day. It's Zip Code Day, July 1st, 1963. Zip codes were introduced in the United States. And it's U.S. Stamp Day. It's the day that the U.S. Postal Service issued its very first stamp in 1847, a 5-cent stamp honoring Benjamin Franklin, the founder of the post office.
And what could you send for 5 cents in that?
You could send basically a letter, you know, if what they, you know.
A Sears and Roebuck house.
Yes, right.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what I was wondering, you know. I mean, what did that cover, you know, that five cents?
That was for a letter.
For a letter, okay. You
know, folded, heavy paper, all that good stuff.
Okay.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah. Well, I was just going to ask, Bruce, do you know if the budget that was passed this morning, bad news.
By one vote.
By J.D. Vance's vote. Does that budget have any effect on the Postal Service?
I don't know for sure. I know it was attempting to roll back. The Postal Service had set up this whole plan to buy electric vehicles.
Yeah.
And I think that bill rolls that back.
Oh, that would, any subsidies electric, and whatnot exactly. for that. Yeah, but the Postal Service is independent of the federal government to a certain degree, isn't it?
Supposedly, yes. Yes, it is. Although the director is appointed by the president, approved by the Congress. But and the current director, I think he's still in place. Not a friend of the
Postal Office. Oh, no. He's gone.
Is he
gone? Yeah, you're talking about went blank on his name.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, no, I think I'm pretty sure he's gone.
But also today in history, 1997, Hong Kong reverted to Chinese rule after 156 years of British rule. So as we enter into competition with China, it's important to realize that China is in for the long game. I mean, they were willing to wait 156 years to take Hong Kong back from the British. And when they did, they took it back.
They've been in for the long game for 1,000+ years.
That's right, exactly. 1979, for those of us who were around at that time, Sony introduced the Walkman, which was an amazing sort of, you know, it sort of freed you up to walk around and hear music.
Oh, my gosh, for sure. You know, and the iPhone had its anniversary here just 2 or 3 days ago.
2006.
2006, right.
Yep.
Well, I can tell you that in 1980, 81, somewhere in there, I was flying a DC-4 off the beach up in Alaska, and I had a Walkman, which is really a big deal, and it was fit. I had the little earphones fit under my headphones, and I would listen to Jimmy Buffett as I was flying off the beach. That's serious.
Thinking about the Caribbean as you were flying off the Alaska beach.
That was appropriate. That's right. Much more appropriate than Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, indeed.
Also interesting, I found this interesting. In 1931, the Boeing Air Transport Company was formed, which later morphed into United Airlines. That's an interesting long-term relationship between United and Boeing that I sort of had not realized.
I did not realize that either.
I read an interesting thing that 2 days ago, speaking of which, it was the creation of the new supersonic aircraft in the United States by a company that I think is going by the name of Concorde. There never was a Concorde company.
No, right,
that was, a French-British, partnership. And they went bye-bye after the air show, the Paris air show, I think, when they had the big crash. But now we've got an American company that's bringing in this new technology that doesn't lay a sonic boom all the way across wherever it's traveling. Interesting.
I was thinking it was called Boom Sonic, but you think it's Concorde? Right.
And they named the company Concorde. Huh? That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Fascinating. So in 1867, the Dominion of Canada was established. So it did not include British Columbia or some of the prairie provinces at that point, but the beginning of what we know today as Canada in 1867. And in 1863, the Battle of Gettysburg began.
So wow.
The three-day battle.
Have you both been to Gettysburg?
Yeah.
I have not.
Yeah. Oh, and man.
I've always wanted
it is
to
a
go.
moving place to be.
It is.
Really extraordinary.
There's one other thing that occurred today, and that was that the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, the album, went to number one and stayed there for 15 weeks, and that occurred today.
Wow.
1967.
Wow.
So there.
So the beginning of July, an auspicious month for us all, I think. So.
Yeah, and the weather. Rather extraordinary. I mean, you know there's global warming when summer actually begins before July 5th.
Exactly. I think the number of times I've watched fireworks with fleeces on and rain hats.
Yeah, so, you look at that weather report, and it is looks really nice. A little too warm for me, but...
And a little dry.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly, yeah. So let's before we crank up talking about hydroplanes and the upcoming run around the island on July 4th in the early morning, let me ask each of you, what's your favorite memory or most lasting memory of the hydros on Vashon?
You know, I don't know how many mornings I've awakened going, what the heck is buzzing around the house here? If I get bumblebees, what is that? What is that? And then suddenly go, oh, wait a minute. It's the hydros. And I'm way in the middle of the island.
Yeah.
Middle of the island. And you can hear them. And I love it myself. I think, oh, yeah. But I'm not about to get up and go down there. Not a chance.
That was probably your next question.
Yeah, not a chance.
You took the words out of my mouth there, Truman. In 1987, the first year we were here, we had a place we rented down on the water right around the corner from Jensen Point on the Burton Peninsula. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know. I didn't know anything about the height. And I actually woke up. And started swatting around my head. I thought I'd been attacked by a herd of bees.
The giant mosquito made it through the net.
That's right. But I think it's just a wonderful tradition. I really do.
Yeah.
So Vashon.
It is very Vashon. That's sort of my first memory. We moved here in '73, and I remember hearing them, but. It's when we bought the house at KVI Beach, and that morning, you know, the 4th of July, it was a day, you know, just perfectly still, you know, early morning sunshine, and then this coming through, and so I'm like, wow, it just begins the 4th of July. It lets you know it is a holiday. It was just spectacular.
And you're kind of a real aficionado of the hydroplane races, are you not? It's, being the historian that you are.
I am a bit. I've worked with Brian Breno. Brian has done a book about the hydroplanes. He published it about 2 years ago. It's available at the Vashon bookstore. It's available at the museum. And it's a great compilation of sort of year-by-year history of who's doing the races, great photographs. It's just a really interesting collection of sort of hydroplane ephemera, if you will.
It is a great book. It's very, very interesting. If you had a copy, you could hold it up so our listeners could see it.
See it, yeah.
I am.
That's what he did last year. So here's the question, Bruce. We have listeners all over the world, and we're talking about hydros and they're buzzing and... Right. Why don't you give us a full description of what we're really talking about here? I mean, what are we talking about?
That's good.
What is a hydroplane?
Yeah. Hydroplanes come in all kinds of sizes and shapes, but essentially they're boats that are made to ride not on the water but on a cushion of air. For most hydroplanes, and if you've seen hydroplane races, you notice every once in a while they go airborne and flip over and all that kind of stuff. In the 1920s, a boat designer came across the idea of what's called a step hull. And it's a hull that runs straight back about two-thirds of the way and then has about a 6-inch step that goes vertically straight down. And then the rest of the hull runs out to the stern. Well, what happens is as you get up to speed, that step captures air under the hull, and so it picks the boat up. So it's really riding on a cushion of air. For most hydroplanes, all that's in the water is the very last couple inches of the hull and the motor, the prop, you know. And for the Vashon hydroplane run, they don't call it a race. They originally talked about it as a race around the island. And they did it in conjunction with a predicted log race, which is a kind of race. I don't know if airplanes do predicted log races or not. But predicted log races where you plot a course and then you sort of measure your time. You submit it ahead of time, and then you try and keep to, you know, it's going to take me 10 minutes to run from Jensen Point to, you know, to the buoy at Manzanita or whatever. And tide and wind and current and all those, you've got to take all those things in effect.
Yeah, we have exactly the same thing.
Yeah, it's not straddling a log with a paddle.
No.
No, not quite. But it's a predicted race. You predict your time and your arrival at points along the route, and then... So they used to do that, and then they had an outboard race as well, so just regular outboards raced around the island. But they ran into trouble with the county, with the police, the sheriff, and with the Coast Guard. because most of these boats...
Not much left. Yeah,
right. Yeah, a lot of these boats weren't registered. The hydroplanes, which are these small boats, the kinds that go around Vashon are generally about 8 to 12 feet long. So they're really small. One person crouched down in the cockpit. The big unlimited
in horrible positions sometimes.
Oh, God, it's just, you know, you talk to these guys. By the end of the race, they can barely move. They've been crouching for... Well, the fastest times are in the 30-minute range, you know, and sometimes it's closer to 45 minutes or 50 minutes. But can you imagine crouching on your hands and knees, you know, sort of...
Bouncing.
Hopefully not out of the boat.
Here's a technical question for you, Bruce. What is the total distance around the island? Do you know the circumference?
I think they say it's about 53 miles.
53 miles.
Yeah. So, and the fastest time, I think, is about 31 minutes.
That's going pretty darn fast.
Yeah.
These hydros are a little different than the big competitive hydros, which some of whom have jet engines, do they not?
They do. Yeah, these are sort of what might be called micro hydros. In fact, this Thursday evening, if you're interested, this Thursday evening at 6 o'clock at the Heritage Museum, we're going to dedicate the Roger Sherman Hydro Shed. We have an exhibit of the very first hydroplane that ran around the island in 1955, owned by Roger Sherman, built by Ted Jones, or designed and built by Ted Jones, who lived on Vashon, who was a very famous hydroplane designer. And so we'll dedicate the shed and a display about the hydroplane run around the island. So that's this Thursday evening, because July 4th is on Friday. They've moved first Friday to first Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So July 3rd, first Thursday, will be sort of the open house and, you know, the gallery tour and those kind of things. And so 6 o'clock at the museum, come and celebrate the dedication of the Roger Sherman hydroplane exhibit. These small hydroplanes that run around the island have a limited engine size, and sort of that's the gearhead side of it. They're all playing around with getting these small two-cylinder engines with no mufflers. That's why you hear the noise, you know, to go as fast as possible. And the plane, the hydroplanes themselves are generally about 10 feet long, weigh 60, 70 pounds. I mean, they're pretty lightweight kind of things, and one person in them, and they literally fly around the island.
And are they primarily wood, or are they a mix of wood and fiberglass?
Originally they were all wood. Now it's kind of a mix. When we did the... We had a small exhibit of Roger's hydroplane a couple years ago, and when we did the opening, all the hydroplane drivers brought their hydroplanes and parked them in front of the museum.
Oh,
we must
cool.
had 10 different hydroplanes there. And you could really walk around and see the difference. And the difference in design, you know, some have longer pontoons. Most hydroplanes have sort of pontoons on either side, and then the center hull and the pontoons keep it from wobbling too much. Hopefully.
Then that scoop yeah. between them serves as the,
right,
as
yeah.
the
and
cushion.
Then that, right. And then that step hull sort of lifts it up and lets it fly. So,
Bruce, it may yep. be hard to believe, but there are people on this island who do not know where the museum is.
Yes, the Heritage Museum is on Bank Road to the west of downtown Vashon, two blocks across from the fire station, next to the Penny Farsi Fire Building. It's the old Lutheran church, so feel free to come by anytime. Museum's open 1 to 4 Wednesday through Sunday. And then once a month, I think on the third Saturday of every month, we have a 10 to 4 sort of children's day.
Oh.
So you can come out and see Tusky and learn all about the mammoth that lived on Vashon Island and that kind of thing. And then we have periodically special exhibits and that kind of thing. But the special exhibit we did with Rogers Hydroplane grew into this hydroplane shed in the back. So in the back garden, we have a special built building built largely by Mike Sutta's son, who's a contractor on the island, who donated his labor, and Earl von Buskirk from Island Lumber, who donated all the materials.
Wow, very nice.
And the Buskirk family is a long time hydroplane family on the island. So Earl was donated all the materials for the exhibit.
Is it true that Oscar the Troll used to ride on the back of Tusky the Mammoth?
I thought you were going to ask, is it true that Oscar the Troll used to be a hydroplane?
No. Well, that's possible.
It's possible, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I think trolls and mammoths probably had a sort of sympathetic relationship.
Yeah.
You know, they sort of, they took care of each other.
Yeah. Symbiotic. Yeah.
Symbiotic.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So the hydroplane run race. It was originally a race. It began in 1955, sort of just on a whim. You know, Roger Stanley said, I had this hydroplane. He drove around this inner harbor and just thought, wow, wouldn't it be neat to go around the island? So in the summer of 1955, he made the first run around the island. And of course, others who were playing around with hydroplanes got interested. I joined him the next year, and it became, of course, when you have two hydroplanes running alongside of each other, it's automatically a race.
Yeah, who's going to win? Yeah.
Right. And so it evolved into a more formalized race beginning in 1960, and sponsored by the festival, sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce, that kind of thing. And that's where it began to get into sort of difficulties. It was a race, it had a sponsor, all those kind of things. And so you needed insurance, you needed permits. And so it went kind of rogue Vashon very quickly and became what it is today, a sort of just a group of people who drive hydroplanes deciding to go around the island at the same time.
Coincidentally at the same time.
Coincidentally.
Just a pure coincidence.
Yeah. Right. It's okay. Not a race.
That's right.
Although there is an unofficial timekeeper, right. Brian Breno, unofficially keeps the time on a Mickey Mouse watch.
No.
That was the original timekeep piece used in the 1960s to measure the time.
And how do they get to, or do they just check the time of each of the riders? And I mean, they don't cross the starting line or anything at the same time, right?
They do.
They have
an official start time, mm-hmm. you know, and that's the time you can cross any time after that.
Oh, so, I see. Okay.
An unofficial start time.
An unofficial start time. And it takes place at Jensen Point. So right. If you're up and about at about 5 o'clock or 5:30 in the morning,
oh yeah,
make your way down to Jensen Point. Bring beer.
bring beer. and well, it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah, right.
Bloody Marys.
Yeah. And watch them launch these hydroplanes. That's always an interesting thing because they start the hydroplane motors before the boats are fully in the water. Usually you have 4 or 5 guys holding the hydroplane up out of the water. They get the engine started, and then they drop it, and boom, it takes off.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, because they're air-cooled engines, right. You know, just little air-cooled outboards. So it's a very interesting sort of thing to watch.
Wow.
And then they zip around there for a few minutes, and then the start time, and boom, they're off. And the course almost always has been out of the harbor. So Jensen Point's the start line. Or the beginning line. There's no race, so it's not a start. It's the beginning of the run around the island. And they go out past Manzanita. They come up the east shore of Maury Island, past Tramp Harbor, up to the north end, around the north end, down Covos Passage, back into the outer harbor, and then back to Jensen Point.
So it's counterclockwise.
Counterclockwise.
Yeah,
right,
okay.
Around the island. So the race has been run every year since 1960. Excuse me, the run has been run every year since 1960, except for 2 years.
Hmm.
1973, and it's sort of a measure to me of changing island in the 1970s. Hmm. All of a sudden, beginning in the early 70s, there started to be a lot of complaints about the noise.
Hmm.
And so in 1973... when the hydroplane drivers arrived at Jensen Point early in the morning of July 4th, they met a contingent of King County Sheriff officers who warned them if they ran around the island, they would be cited for noise violations because of complaints.
Oh, brother.
And sitting off of Jensen Point was an 82-foot Coast Guard cutter. Waiting to cite them for having unregistered boats. So
it sounds like a bit of an overreaction.
That's yes. Right. So the hydroplane drivers all decided not to run that day.
Hmm.
So they went home. And then 10 days later, they did it anyway. No Coast Guard. No
Mash on scoff laws.
But when they arrived back at Jensen Point, there was a King County sheriff waiting for them, and he cited that sheriff wrote citations for every boat for noise violations because they didn't have mufflers.
No.
So
I wonder how much of a penalty they had to pay.
Ooh, I think it was $10, if I recall.
Okay. Oh,
it wasn't a huge amount, but $10 in 1973,
yeah.
It was $10, right?
Yeah.
The only other time it has not been run is 1995, when there was a major storm moving through Puget Sound, and it was just too rough. And so
I was just going to ask that.
So they postponed it.
Yeah.
But most times, I mean, July, 5:30 in the morning, you know, tends to be pretty flat, and so it's a good time for the run.
Sure.
I mean, there's been a few times when it's gotten a little choppy. A few times when there's only been one boat finished, you know, because the others have swamped out or flipped over or whatever.
Oh,
you know, because if it gets choppy, those little boats, 10-foot boat, you know, flying across the water at, 40, 50 miles an hour, you know, sort of think, whoa, wait a minute. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that kind of begs the question. History of capsizing?
Hmm.
People falling over, thrown out of their boats or whatever? Do you know anything about that?
Happens all the time.
Yeah.
Yep, happens all the time.
They
wear helmets.
Oh.
And they wear life jackets.
Are there safety boats or anything?
Yes. Yeah, there are. Yeah, what happens is there's a number of boats that follow around the island,
right.
You know, speed boats that can sort of keep up with them.
Oh, okay.
You know, so yeah. So there's safety boats going around. And one time one of the hydros flipped at the north end. You know, it was getting breezy up there, flipped over. Washington State Ferry guys came out and
oh, really?
Picked them up.
Hey, look who's here.
Thing, so.
Look who's here.
So it's that kind of thing. So But yeah, it's an interesting kind of interesting experience every 4th of July morning. We're joined by Brian Breno. Thanks, Brian. Come on in here. Have a seat.
Yep. Okay,
in just a minute. But yeah, it's an interesting way to begin the 4th of July. Yeah. So if you're up for it at 5:30 in the morning, 5 o'clock is a better time, get down there. It's always amazing to see the crowd of Vashon Islanders who show up for the
I was
Heights
just going to ask, how many people show up down there? Bruce, do you have a count?
Hundred. Yep.
Really?
Yeah, it's a lot. A lot of old-time Vashon Islanders.
Wow.
You know, in the past, I don't know how much, it'll be interesting to ask Brian. In the past, I mean, there have been all-night parties at Jensen Point, bonfires, those
and waiting
of things.
For the waiting for the
yes,
run in the morning.
The arrival of the hydroplanes.
Oh.
But, you know, so it's just quite a celebration. But,
yeah. So, let's see, did I have... oh, yeah, as you said, 73 and 95 were the 2 years that it didn't go. But 95 was a storm.
Yep.
Did they run it later then? Or
They did not.
No.
I don't believe so.
In 73, so. They did, though.
Yep,
they, 73. 10 days later.
Yeah. Typical Vashon.
Yeah,
anti-establishment. Exactly. You can't tell us what to do.
Exactly.
So we came back, and they did it 10 days later.
All right.
We're joined by Brian Breno, who is the... I would call him the official historian of the hydroplane run around Vashon Island. So we've been talking a bit about it, about the annual hydroplane run. But first, maybe you can tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got to Vashon Island, and how you got interested in hydroplanes.
My dad grew up on Vashon, and he spent a lot of time in the summers with Norm Stanley. Norm taught my dad and my mom, who's a summer girl, how to water ski. And then in 1961, my family had been living in Tacoma. We moved to Vashon into a house on Quartermaster Drive, 10 doors down from Roger Stanley. And I remember that first summer, my mom and dad saying, "We're going to wake up at 6 in the morning on 4th of July and hydros are going to go." And we knew what was going on because Roger and Warren would be out buzzing around practicing. And so every year, we did it.
From 1961.
So that's kind of how I got involved in it.
So how did you become the unofficial timekeeper?
Well, that's kind of a long story. A guy, Paul Stoddard, used to be the starter, and when he passed away, I just kind of took over the job of doing that, and that's when I really started thinking, you know, let's get this all down, written down in history.
So you use his original Mickey Mouse watch still?
No.
Oh.
They weren't ready to give that one up. So,
oh, really? Oh, no.
So Jenny, his daughter, still has the Mickey Mouse. But I got all his old notes of, you know, who won, and cracks you up because a lot of them are like, he'll just tear a piece out of the newspaper and write it on there. And just, I do the same thing, just little notes of who won. And they didn't start taking records until probably about 1974, 75. Before that, they'd just go. And I don't think anyone was even timing them at that point. It was because it was just Roger. Originally, it was just Roger Stanley, Warren Bibbins, and Roger Compton, who were the only ones that did it. So this is the legend I heard from Gene Sherman, Paul Stoddard, Warren Bibbins, those guys, Roger. So Roger and Warren used to like to cause a little commotion. So on the 4th of July, they tow a raft out in the middle of the harbor and put a bunch of dynamite and fireworks on it and go by in a boat and throw flame on there and boom, 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 boom. And they also did that on New Year's Eve.
Oh.
And one New Year's Eve, I believe it was probably 1958, the harbor residents were pissed off. And they just enough pressure that they didn't do it. But they had both just gotten brand new hydros. So they must have thought, we'll cause some commotion. So they went out on New Year's morning. I think it must have been 1959. They say 58, but Roger and Warren didn't buy the hydros until 58. So I think it was the 59. And so they raced around the harbor, cold, cold morning, and said they froze their butts off. So then Roger and Warren somehow and got McCormick out in a sailboat, I think like 1960, and he timed them and they went around the island. And I think after that, every year they started doing it. And so up until 1973, it was basically just those three guys. And they take off from Warren's Beach and Rogers Beach and go around the island, come back, and no fanfare, and you know. So in 73, a couple other guys got hydros and really fast speed boats. So they decided to all leave together from Jensen Point. And that's when that whole thing kind of solidified into the event it is today.
Mm-hmm. So is 73 the year that the sheriff showed up?
Yeah, so we were, I was a kid, and we'd hang out in Warren's Beach, and then the 3rd of July, we'd party down there. Warren would go to the reservation and get us fireworks and stuff. And so we were down there having fun, and about 8 o'clock at night, in comes the Coast Guard cutter. And it was like, ooh, you know, that thing's big. It's 84 feet or something. And you never see it in Quartermaster Harbor. And everybody's like, ooh. So people are starting like, oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And so everybody gets down there in the morning. And granted, this was, I think, only the second time they'd left from, or maybe it was the first time they'd left from Jensen's Point. Anyway, they get down there. The cops are on the beach. The Coast Guard's out in boats, and they said, you go, we're going to give you a ticket for disturbing the peace and no registration on the hydros. So they didn't run. Everybody's like, oh, okay. But they whisper, next weekend we'll do it. Next weekend we'll do it. So I think it was 10 days later. They did it, and the local cop gave them a ticket for disturbing the peace. And one of the guys, Roger's neighbor, was a lawyer, and he helped them, and they got their, I think they paid a $25 fine or something. But they were told, you can't do it again unless you have insurance and a plan. So they scrounged together some money and got the insurance. The JCs were running festival at that point, and they took it on as part of festival. The Coast Guard had some rules for them. Somehow they are allowed to keep the loud exhaust. I don't know how. But they were told they were supposed to go. They go around the island counterclockwise. They were told they were supposed to go clockwise. So for a couple years, they went clockwise. And the guys didn't like it because of the current or the waves or whatever. And they figured no one was watching them, so they just went back to the regular way. So I think it was probably, I don't know, till the early 80s that they had insurance and was part of festival. And then JC's quit doing the festival and went to the Chamber of Commerce, and all that just kind of went away. And no one even tried to get insurance or thought about it. So ever since then, it's just been, again, like a little outlaw. And, you know, there's always complaints, and sometimes the cops come down, but then no one's gotten a ticket since 1973.
So what's the fastest and the slowest time around the island?
All right. I'll break out the books. I don't remember off the top of my head. The fastest time just came the other year, a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Bo Coy in 2023 made it around in 31 minutes and 19 seconds.
Wow. And how far is it around the island?
I estimate 47 miles. I did a Google, you know, point-to-point kind of search. The slowest is almost an hour, so 56 minutes.
Wow.
I think there's a 58-minute, too. And that's obviously a morning that was probably really windy, and those little boats just don't like that wind. Oh, wait, here we go. 1 hour... 1 minute and 40 seconds. Larry Fuller. And he was in a little boat, 14-foot fiberglass V-hull boat with a big engine on it. And it just bounced all the way around. And I think he was the only one that made it around that year.
Hmm. So 30 minutes would be like the four-minute mile mark.
That,
the break 30 minutes would be quite the...
Well, one boat did get exactly 30 minutes, okay. or 30:01, Todd Gateman. But he was riding... he was in 31-32. He was in an... it was powered by a Pinto engine, so it was an inboard hydro. So we just kind of... since he's one of the guys, but the rule is always
he should have got an award for having a Pinto engine.
Yeah, it didn't blow up. Or, you know.
Yeah, he won three times in a row in that thing. It was designed by Ted Jones, the famous hydro guy. So yeah, 30 minutes is pretty damn fast.
Yeah, it's fast. Yeah, yeah,
for sure.
There's been some fun stories that boat I was talking about, Larry Fuller. It's another... design by Ted Jones. I think they did it for the military. I don't know. Anyway, they, I'm trying to think of the name. Somebody was racing it. They fell out of Tahlequah, fell out of the boat, and the boat circled around. He climbed back in the boat and finished. He hit a big tugboat wake and got thrown out of the boat.
Oh, gosh.
Wow.
I'm sorry. I'm just blanking on the name now.
But that is remarkable, is it not? I mean, and how darn fast was it? Well, he probably got off the throttle when he fell out.
Yeah.
So it's probably just motoring around, but still.
Yeah, but
you get back on the darn thing. That's amazing.
He came in soaking wet and freezing.
Yeah.
So what's been the most hydroplanes running in any one given year?
I think maybe 8 was probably the high water mark. And a lot of these are passed down from one guy to another. Mm-hmm. There's one boat that is owned by Carl Olson right now that has won the most, mm-hmm. besides Roger Stanley. Roger's won 9. He's the most consistent, the winner. But this other hole, 3 or 4 people have won in it several times. Mm-hmm. And I heard rumors that Carl Olson might be putting his son in it, so it would be another second generation driver for this year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. In terms of generational, I mean, Roger Stanley, Roger Compton, Warren Bibbins, I mean, they were racing in the 50s. They're in their 80s. If they're still here, they're in their 80s now.
So in the 70s, Warren had 2 or 3 little hydros, and he would mentor young kids like Chris Van Busker, Drew Carr, so those kids who are a little bit younger than me. And they became the next generation. But there's only a few of them. And so when they started getting older and dropped off, and by the late 80s, we were kind of worried that no one would take it up. But then this generation, there's, you know, 8 or 9 of them now. Not that they're always all out there every year. Right. But it's always been just guys that like to wrench on things and go fast. And it's, you know, never been sanctioned or anything. And I think that's why it's been able to go on so long, is it's just a fun little thing.
So is there a limit to the size of the engines? Or
no, there's no... The kind of golden rule is to win and to get the trophy. And I think in 75 they created a trophy, and so every year they put the name and the time on it. And you have to be a little outboard powered hydro, because in the late 70s, early 80s, into the 90s, a lot of people came over with their offshore racers, their big powerful boats, and they are never counted really into the total. There's been a couple inboard hydros like Todd Gateman. There was a woman in the one woman who has raced in over the years. Kelly Van Buskirk also supposedly won, but they were in one of those big jet boats. But no one else, I don't think anyone else made it that year. So it's always been basically for the little hydros. Other people run in it, but they never get the trophy. I don't think Todd, when he did it in 30 minutes, even got the trophy.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, you got to keep the tradition going. Come on, you know, get those little boats. And,
it's not just a matter of more power.
Yeah, yeah. Skill.
So,
Come on.
Yeah. So who are some of the younger drivers that are coming on that have been racing the last 4, 5, 10 years?
So we got Evan Mattingly, who just retired, Chris Christopherson, who retired, Gary Rice retired. So these are all people that were racing from about in the 90s and into 2010. Mm-hmm. And now we got some young guys, and I'm going to go over their names here. So Tony Bianchi, who did it a couple years, but I don't think he's doing it anymore. Jacob Middling is one of the solids. Bo Coy, who's won a few times. Nick Adamson, another young guy doing it. Mitch Van Busker, who is also a second generation. His dad, Chris, was like the second ring, you know, the Warren, and then Chris, and those guys came the next level. But I'm counting, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Probably 70 people on here, 60 people.
Oh, wow. On the list. Wow. That's interesting. But not all of those are going to run, obviously. No.
No, over the years.
Over the year. Oh, I see.
Oh,
over
it
the
was
years.
Steve
oh, I got
Payne
it.
Who fell out of the boat. And a woman named Teresa Kennedy came over. We don't know how she heard about her. She came over from off island and did it that one time. Hmm. Other than that, this has been all guys.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, Roger Stanley, Roger Compton, they used to race around the region. They didn't just do the run around Vashon. They did these small hydroplanes on the
Warren. Pardon me. Roger went from BC to California. Hmm. It's funny. They throw the hydro in the back of the car and put the motor in the trunk and take off and go for the races. And he did that, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 years. Roger Compton continued to do it, I think, longer, later into the 80s.
So, Brian, tell us a little bit about the Roger Compton hydroplane shed exhibit at the museum and what's going on there.
Roger Stanley, his hydro is... it was designed by Ted Jones, who is the inventor of the three-point hydro. A three-point hydro is they have sponsons under the front, and the boat gets up in the air, and those sponsons just bounce off the water, and basically the only thing in the water is the propeller and the rudder. Hmm. So before that, they had had what was called a step hydro, where it was kind of a pontoon, but the bow came in, and then it went up about a foot, and the bottom of the boat was a foot up from the, and they would kind of ride up. But Jones figured this out and instantly revolutionized hydro racing, and it brought in the era of the unlimited hydroplane races like in Seattle. So, you know, I forget where I was going with that.
Well, we're talking about the exhibit at the museum.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, Roger went in 1958 out to Ted Jones' shop and bought a hydro that Jones had built and designed. And Roger won the race when they started keeping records 9 times. He was always the most dependable boat to make it around. And... you know, I don't think he retired till he was, let's see, his last race was 96. So ever since 96, the hydro has been sitting under a tarp in his backyard, and we have always been concerned, you know, is it going to last, you know? And so I've been talking to Roger about this. He's been wanting to donate it, the hydro, to the museum since about the time he retired. He was talking about it. And it took us all those years to figuring out how we would do it, where we would put it. And finally, Earl Van Busker, we came up with an idea to build a boathouse behind the museum to house the hydro. And Earl Van Busker, grew up in the same neighborhood with Roger and me, and he was around the boats and stuff. And his younger brother, Chris, who has since passed away, was very involved in the hydro. So he donated all the materials to build the shed. Kevin Suddeth did the construction. Jacob Middling did the excavation. And we had a bunch of the hydro guys as volunteers to put it all together. And so the hydro's in there, and we just, I'm going, as soon as I'm done here, I'm going out to get the graphics. We have some really beautiful photographs and graphics to explain the story of the hydros. We have a list of all the participants and the records. Mm-hmm. And so at 6 o'clock on Thursday, we're going to have a little dedication for it. And in the backyard of the museum from 6 to 7. And I'm sure a bunch of the hydro guys are going to show up. And then afterwards, they usually practice that night. So people can go down to Jetson Point and see them.
Fantastic. So thanks, Brian. We're out of time. So thank you for coming in. Thanks for telling us about the hydros. You know, for Truman, for Craig, for me, Bruce, we'll see you next week on the Brown Briefly. And next week, we have Greta Simpson from the Vashon Heritage Museum talking about the new exhibit of the Shwabapsh and Puyallup tribes Sherman exhibit at the museum.